In January of 2018, Dwayne Pritchett was detained by NYPD officers in his Bronx home after his father called 911 for help dealing with Dwayne's disturbing mental health episode. The incident ended in tragedy as Dwayne died while being taken into custody, with the city's medical examiner concluding that the death occurred, quote, during a physical struggle with police, including neck compression. In the ensuing 2 years, the case was reviewed by the state's attorney general's office, which has the authority to investigate civilian deaths connected to police officers. In mid-September, Attorney General Letitia James cleared the responding officers of any criminal culpability, citing multiple factors leading to Dwayne's death, including food found in his airways, a history of cardiovascular disease, and drugs in his system at the time. The lack of charges, specifically due to the presence of drugs in Dwayne's system, underscores the need for change in our criminal justice system, according to the Drug Policy Alliance. And to discuss this issue, we're joined by the group's New York State Director, Melissa Moore. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So why is this something that the Drug Policy Alliance cares about?
I mean, for us, it's horrific that we continue to see instances like this far too often, where a family member recognizes that a loved one is in a distress moment and calls for help. And because we have a system that has put far too many resources, in my opinion, into law enforcement response and militarized policing when they're in that moment when family desperately needs actual like healthcare and mental health support, instead what they get is a militarized response that, you know, in this case and in many others, leads to a death that absolutely did not need to happen.
Can you describe what was happening with Dwayne at the time his father called 911 and who you think should be the kind of people that respond in that sort of crisis?
Yeah, you know, it seems like from the statement that his father gave to the attorney general as they were doing the investigation, that Dwayne was, you know, in some mental distress, that he is somebody who has had some mental health issues prior to that. And, you know, his father called 911 and said that he was frightened and that he requested the ambulance. And he said that his son was frightened also. And so you have this, you know, heartbreaking moment that is truly scary when somebody's, you know, experiencing an acute episode. And yet, you know, what they got in response were NYPD officers, you know, storming into the apartment and ultimately causing such harm to Dwayne Pritchett that he died. And it's frankly absurd. I'm almost speechless right now as I'm recounting what happened, because in no way, shape, or form should any New Yorker have to deal with a situation where they call for help and the person who they wanted to have help the most comes out of the situation dead at the hands of the people who were sent out. It's absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, clearly NYPD and law enforcement in general just should not be first responders in crisis situations or in emotional distress or substance use situations. It is something that is fully outside of the scope of what they are equipped for. And, you know, frankly, we should do a much better job of resourcing the agencies and the community-based organizations who are actually prepared and appropriate to do that work.
Yeah, what would the appropriate response look like?
Yeah, I think it's having somebody first and foremost who's actually trained in mental health or substance use issues, depending on, you know, which issues is identified by the person who's calling for help. But having somebody who's actually, you know, trained in trauma-informed response, has a background in the community, can actually relate to people, and can bring them in, and can de-escalate a situation if it's starting to quicken, as opposed to, you know, what ends up happening with law enforcement, where things escalate and there's no accountability afterwards either. But, you know, we have a system right now that completely overinvests in law enforcement response and does not invest in the much more appropriate forms of care and response.
we've heard from law enforcement officials on this show who say that when responding to this type of crisis, that they should still be the first responders, but that they think that they need to have more resources so that they're better equipped to handle that situation. Do you think that's a possible remedy, or do you think that it's just a mistake to begin with having someone who has a law enforcement background being the first responder?
Yeah, I think it's I think it misses the mark, you know, in terms of, you know, from an advocacy perspective and for somebody who likes to look at the root causes of a situation to try to figure out what an appropriate policy response should be. If the situation that we're dealing with consistently is a lack of informed response to pretty acute situations, the solution in my book is actually having the people who are already trained, who already exist in our society and in our communities, and having them be the folks who actually respond in these scenarios. It's not a matter of throwing even more money and resources at an entity that has proved insufficient and incapable of keeping communities safe, quite frankly. And in this moment, it's just horrific that we keep kind of circling this drain. And we have enough examples at this point of, you know, attempts at more training, attempts at giving more resources or body cameras. And what we see consistently is that the police just should not be the people who are involved in situations like this, full stop.
Do you think the Attorney General's office made a mistake by not issuing any criminal charges to the responding officers?
I'm not an attorney, so I can speak to, you know, just in terms of what it communicates about this administration's priorities and whether there can actually be accountability within the way the legal system is set up right now. I think it shows yet again that we need serious policy change if we're actually going to stop instances like this from happening and just straight up killings of people at the hands of law enforcement. You know, the governor announced an executive order back in June, you know, instructing municipalities to reform their police policies and submit it to the state prior to next budget year. And so there's, you know, there's a bit of a scramble right now across the state for municipalities to do that sort of work. And unfortunately, the governor didn't really give a framework. He didn't necessarily lay out just fully and completely that New York has to stop operating in a way that prioritizes criminalization and stigmatizing people over health responses that actually center a person's well-being when they're in crisis. And I think he, you know, he had an opportunity at his press conference yeutherday when he spoke about Breonna Taylor and said that it was outrageous that charges weren't more significant that were announced, you know, saying that, you know, if a person is murdered, then there's a murderer, and that's how it works, and the underlying police action should have never happened in the first place. And he didn't mention Dwayne Pritchett. He didn't mention Daniel Prude, who was killed at the hands of police in Rochester just a few months ago, which I think is quite telling, right? I mean, it's the governor not taking responsibility for actions that are happening, you know, within the chain of command in his own state. And I think he needs to be much clearer about removing mental health and substance use from policing, just period.
How, if at all, do you think the legalization of marijuana, something your group pushes for, would affect this type of situation if, for example, we don't have any major changes to the way we respond to a health crisis like this?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think they're two quite different issues. You know, we generally don't see people having the sort of problematic responses based off of marijuana. But at the same time, marijuana is used at a tremendous scale to criminalize people currently and to justify stops and interactions. There was an instance of NYPD officers just brutally attacking a young Black man in Brooklyn just before shelter in place went into effect over supposedly the odor of marijuana as he was sitting in a park in an evening. And I think that type of thing happens again and again across the state, where the odor of marijuana is used to try to excuse and to justify the types of aggressive behavior from law enforcement toward community members and toward individuals, disproportionately young people of color in New York State, despite the fact that people use at pretty similar rates. And that is completely problematic. And so, in terms of legalization of marijuana for adult use in New York, to me, it has the twofold benefit of once and for all removing a justification that law enforcement has used for far too long to target communities and individuals, and also provides more resources for reinvesting in communities that have been the hardest hit by a lot of these policies for decades and are feeling the generational impacts of that, which are now really heightened by the COVID pandemic as well.
I'm curious what you think policing would be like in New York if adult use of marijuana was legalized, and whether you've seen any changes to practices or attitudes in states where they've already legalized marijuana, like in Colorado or neighboring Massachusetts.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen across the board in states that have legal access to marijuana for adult use is that the number of arrests clearly drop really significantly. But legalization doesn't end racism, right? I mean, we're talking about changes in policy related to a plant, and still operating within a system that has tremendous harm to individuals and communities simply because of the color of their skin or their socioeconomic status. And so I think, it's part of why we work closely with coalitions like Communities United for Police Reform and Justice Committee, which organizes families who have lost loved ones at the hand of law enforcement, because we recognize that shifting policy around marijuana, although it would be very helpful in a lot of these ways, and we've seen that play out in other states where, in Colorado now, various state agencies have more resources and more dollars freed up because they're not wasting that money on totally fruitless marijuana prohibition enforcement. They're actually able to spend money toward education and toward, other health services for their constituents, which makes a lot of sense in the before times of the pandemic situation, but especially right now when every cent counts more than ever, and New York is facing a budget gap. This is certainly the time for a reckoning across the board, and really looking at how can we be most effective in terms of how we're using our resources and actually use them toward an end that's going to help strengthen and build up communities and individuals, as opposed to targeting them and breaking them down and killing them. It makes absolutely no sense.
And finally, I'm curious what the legalization campaign is going to look like in 2021, and whether you think there's any reason to suspect the dynamic in the legislature is going to be different, and that you have a chance to make this happen.
Well, I'm not going to speculate as to the composition of the legislature. Waiting for November to see what's going to take place there. But honestly, we've known for many, many years that public opinion in New York strongly favors legalization, and not just legalization, but marijuana justice. I mean, when people have been asked, how the revenue from legal sale of marijuana for adult use should be spent, there's broad support for the types of community reinvestment proposals that we've always been supportive of from Drug Policy Alliance perspective and Start Smart. So I think the momentum going into this next legislative session around legalization is intense. It's still building. I think even more so as we see the rest of the states that border New York barreling ahead toward legal access. New Jersey, there's a ballot initiative. Pennsylvania's governor and lieutenant governor have been talking about legalization really consistently, especially recently. Connecticut is also moving. So, you know, when you add that to the existing access in Massachusetts, Vermont is also moving ahead with an actual framework for what their regulated market will look like in the entire country of Canada once the borders open up again. You know, we're in a situation where New York has the largest potential market and yet has not taken any action whatsoever, and also has the largest legacy of harm from marijuana criminalization. And so, you know, on all of those fronts, when we look at the communities that were the most devastated and targeted by the marijuana arrest crusade, it's the same communities and neighborhoods that were hit the hardest by COVID. And so, you know, again and again, we see just the layers of compounded crisis that have hit. And we actually have an opportunity through legalization in New York to begin to arrest that, both in terms of stopping criminalization of people and just the justification for those interactions that are totally unnecessary, that can end tragically, as well as making sure that we're actually moving resources in a way that's going to be effective and viable.
You mentioned some of our neighbors and what's going on there, which reminds me that we're part of a joint regional approach to cannabis and vaping policies. And I'm curious whether you've heard anything movement-wise with regards to the regional approach that the governor launched with Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts, or whether that's been pretty dormant over the last few months.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about that since kind of the initial flurry and those meetings that took place, you know, last fall around this time. But other states aren't holding back. You know, they've been moving forward. And, you know, I think at this point, New York is, you know, because of inaction from our governor and our legislature, you know, we're risking just being left in the dust, which makes absolutely no sense when we know that across the board, New Yorkers are supportive of legalization. The latest poll actually showed that there's a majority support among Republicans now as well. And the support for quite a while actually has been strongest upstate for legalization. And so, you know, when we look at that, it really boggles the mind as to why we haven't actually moved forward these policies in New York.
Well, we've been
and done so in a way that's responsive to what our needs actually are in the state.
Well, we've been speaking with Drug Policy Alliance New York State Director Melissa Moore. Melissa, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.